Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, August 8th, 2024. Spokane area, three legislative races in the Spokane area, too close to call between second and third place candidates in top two primaries. Oregon has 34 large wildfires. The state's on track for a record fire season. Cougar Creek Fire still burning in southern Assotin County, and Columbia Generating Station employees who breathe plutonium may have settled with Energy Northwest. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Two Democrats in a Republican-dominated legislative district in the Spokane area still have the most votes after elections officials counted new postmarked mail-in ballots that had arrived Wednesday and Thursday. In both the races in Legislative District 4, the race for second place in the top two primaries is too close to call between two Republicans as ballots continue to arrive. District 4, which includes Spokane Valley and points east to the Idaho state line, has only elected Republicans to the legislature since 1994. In the race to replace Republican Senator Mike Padden of Spokane Valley, who is retiring, Democrat Miguel Valencia has the most votes with 22.9%. Valencia is a law student, Army veteran, and first-time candidate. Four Republicans and one other Democrat split the rest of the vote. The two Republicans competing for the second place spot are Representative Leonard Christian with 21.2% and Spokane Valley businessperson Mike Kelly with 19.4%. Kelly had the endorsement of Senator Padden and the Spokane County Republican Party. The rest of the candidates are unlikely to advance. They are Republican Spokane Valley Mayor Pam Haley with 13.5%, Democrat Paige Scott with 12%, and Republican Spokane Valley City Councilmember Al Merkel with 11.5%. Valencia and Kelly told the Spokesman Review they are optimistic about their chances in November. In the six-way race for the Position 2 House seat in the same district, another Democrat is leading for the seat Leonard Christian vacated to take a stab at running for the state Senate. Democrat Ted Cummings has 25.5% of the vote as ballots continue to arrive. Cummings is a longtime Kaiser Aluminum employee and union advocate. Two Republican candidates are neck and neck for second place in that primary. Former Spokane County Treasurer and State Representative Rob Chase has 23%, and former Spokane Valley City Councilmember Brandy Peets has 22.4%. The three-way race for Position 1 in District 4 is not close, with incumbent Republican Suzanne Schmidt getting 66.5% of the vote. She will face independent Christopher Pockel in November, who got 23.2% of the vote. In Legislative District 3, which is a Democratic stronghold that includes downtown Spokane, a Republican is leading in the top two primary. Insurance executive Tony Keep had 34.3% of the vote as of Wednesday night. Democrat and Spokane City Council President Ben Stuckert is second with 33.6% of the vote. And Democrat and Spokane attorney Natasha Hill, who ran against Republican U.S. Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers in 2022, is close behind in third place with 31.9% of the vote.
KRFP is sponsored by Spectrum 2 Art and Dance Studios, specializing in art and dance classes for child
through adult. 525 South Main Street in Moscow. Information at 208-882-1445, UBU Dance Guru at msn.com, or spectrum2studio.com. For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.
A multi-agency resource center will be open today at the Julietta Elementary School to provide for those impacted by the Texas and Gwen fires, which occurred nearby. The help available includes housing, food, hygiene supplies, and damage assessments. The Lewiston Tribune reports a member of the group Idaho Voluntary Organizations Active in Disasters helped organize the resource center, which was open yesterday as well. Latah and Nez Perce counties also organized the two-day center in Julietta, which includes the American Red Cross, the Salvation Army, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Nez Perce Tribe Social Services Department, United Methodist Committee on Relief, and local government officials. Jeremy Maxand of Idaho Voluntary Organizations Active in Disasters said some families have literally lost everything. The Gwen Fire burned 25 homes and 118 other structures in eastern Latah County and part of Nez Perce County, and the Daily News reported on July 19th the Texas Fire had burned 4 homes and 6 outbuildings. The Lewiston Tribune reported people came to the resource center who did not lose their homes but lost cropland and trees on their properties and needed help replacing fences. The multi-agency resource center at the Julietta Elementary School will be open for a second day only today from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. The Cougar Fire in southern Asotin County, which has been burning since July 15th, is 35% contained and has burned 20,699 acres in mostly rugged terrain north of the Grand Ronde River. An incident report issued late last night says fire managers expect continued elevated fire behavior potential with 24 hours drying of live and dead fuels due to lower daytime relative humidity and nighttime poor recoveries. Primarily minimal fire behavior anticipated. Smoldering and creeping fire behavior with flanking and backing along with isolated torching in afternoon in available timber litter fuels. The fire is burning in timber, tall grass, and brush. The weather concerns section of the report says conditions will be cool and dry today. Quote, but by Friday, the weather pattern will begin to change. A series of weak upper-level low-pressure systems will move through the region beginning Friday and lasting into next week. None of these weather disturbances are very wet, but will be dynamically strong enough to squeeze out some showers and thunderstorms over eastern Oregon and Washington. The state of Oregon is on track to set a wildfire record this year. There are 34 large fires burning in the state with 5 over 100,000 acres. So far this year, 1.3 million acres of land have burned in Oregon, and the fires have destroyed 30 homes and 60 other structures. The Oregon Capital Chronicle reports there has been one fatality, 74-year-old air tanker pilot Bailey Maxwell, who was working near the Falls Fire July 25th, died. Governor Tina Kotek has declared a statewide emergency and asked the federal government for help and to provide regulatory flexibility for affected farmers and ranchers. Kotek has invoked the state's Conflagration Act 9 times this year, which allows the state fire marshal to utilize resources. Air quality has been unhealthy at times in eastern Douglas, Grant, northern Harney, northern Klamath, eastern Lane, northern Malheur, and eastern Wheeler counties. Officials say smoke is imminent in Crook, Deschutes, Jackson, Jefferson, Josephine, and Lake counties. The biggest fire in the state is the Durkee Fire, burning in Baker and Malheur counties in eastern Oregon. It has burned 295,000 acres and destroyed 4 homes and 19 other structures. The Durkee Fire is now 86% contained. The Battle Mountain Complex, where 4 fires combined, has burned 188,000 acres, destroyed 7 homes and 10 other structures, and is 39% contained. Evacuation orders are in effect for the Falls Fire northwest of Burns, which has scorched more than 146,000 acres and is 75% contained. The fire, which is burning in timber, has destroyed 19 homes and 15 other structures. The Lone Rock Fire southeast of Condon in Gillam County has burned 146,000 acres and is 75% contained. The Cow Valley Fire in Malheur County, northwest of Ontario, has burned 133,000 acres and is 99% contained. It has destroyed 2 homes and 5 other structures. Court officials have moved a lawsuit by 2 workers at the Columbia Generating Station near Richland from King County Superior Court to federal court. The workers, who are suing Energy Northwest, the operator of the only commercial nuclear power plant in the Northwest, say they inhaled plutonium and other radionuclides in a 2021 incident. Plutonium is particularly deadly if inhaled because the element easily moves into the bloodstream through the lungs. The two say they have experienced radiation sickness and emotional distress. Energy Northwest told the Tri-City Herald Monday evening the parties in the case have reached an agreement for the lawsuit to be dismissed. The lawsuit results from an incident May 28, 2021, while the Columbia Generating Station was shut down for maintenance and refueling. A containment bag that was to be used for changing out contaminated pipes at the plant failed and released plutonium and other radioactive material into the air. Court records say 22 workers breathed airborne radioactive material, and pipe fitters Shannon Buck Phillips and David Holmes inhaled the most. The lawsuit says Phillips and Holmes requested respiratory protection equipment before working on the pipes, but the company denied their requests. The lawsuit says after the protection bag failed, a radiation technician used a wand to check Phillips and Holmes for exposure and then swore. He changed settings on the wand to a higher setting, and the levels were still off the scale. Besides the two with the most exposure, 20 other workers evacuated through the contaminated room. Because of the incident, the Columbia Generating Station is now one of 3 nuclear power sites in the country where the Nuclear Regulatory Commission requires additional inspections because of performance issues. The Tri-City Herald reports there are 94 nuclear power plant sites in the U.S.
1 in 3 teens in a dating relationship are verbally, emotionally, sexually, or physically abused.
I deserve a healthy relationship. 1 in 2 teens change their values to please their partner.
I deserve to maintain my individuality. 1 in 4 girls are pressured by their boyfriend to have sex.
I deserve to change my mind at any time.
I deserve to be treated with respect.
For more information on the Idaho Teen Dating Violence Project, call 1-888-293-6118.
The escaped Idaho prisoner who is accused of killing a Julietta man in Nez Perce County and is facing the death penalty made his initial appearance in district court in Lewiston Thursday. 32-year-old Skylar Mead appeared via Zoom from the Nez Perce County Jail today. He is represented by Ann Taylor, who is the only death sentence approved public defender in northern Idaho. Taylor is also representing accused quadruple murderer Brian Koberger in his court hearings in Moscow. According to the Lewiston Tribune website, Taylor told Second District Judge Michelle Evans that Mead intended to stand silent, so Judge Evans entered a not guilty plea on Mead's behalf. On Friday last week, Nez Perce County Prosecutor Justin Coleman filed court documents saying he will seek the death penalty for Mead if he is convicted of killing 83-year-old James Monty of Julietta in March. Mead escaped the Idaho Correction Center in Kuna in March when corrections officers brought him to St. Alphonsus Medical Center in Boise, where court records indicate Nicholas Umfenauer, a fellow inmate who had been released 2 months earlier, showed up at an ambulance bay and shot 2 corrections officers. As correctional officers were preparing to take Meade back to the prison at 2:15 a.m. after his treatment at the hospital, Umfenauer appeared at the hospital's ambulance bay and engaged in a shootout with the guards, wounding two, while a third guard was hit with a bullet from a police officer who arrived on the scene and believed the guard was a perpetrator. All three police officers survived. Police say Umfenauer and Meade then drove a stolen Honda Civic to a spot near Julietta in north central Idaho, where they abducted 83-year-old James Monty and his dogs and drove in Monty's car to Leland, about 10 miles from Julietta. Police found Monty's body and the Honda Civic getaway car there. A judge in Ada County has already sentenced Meade to life in prison for the escape and for being a persistent violator. The pair allegedly found Monty walking his dogs near Julietta and abducted him and then killed him. Idaho State Police investigators believe the pair went to the home of 72-year-old Gerald Don Henderson outside of Orofino next and killed him. Police found Meade's shackles and Monty's dogs at Henderson's home. Police believe the pair knew Henderson previously. Police received a tip that the pair had driven back to southern Idaho, perhaps via Montana, and they arrested them March 21st near Twin Falls. There have been no charges in the killing of Henderson so far.
A new report finds Washingtonians are worried about the rising costs of health care, in some cases even avoiding treatment because of the price tag. The survey found 57% of respondents didn't seek medical treatment or modified their prescription drug use in the last year because of cost. One in three Washingtonians reported living in a household with medical debt. Sam Hatzenbieler is with the Economic Opportunity Institute, which is part of the coalition that commissioned the survey.
The survey results are very alarming. More than half of respondents said that they were forced to use money from their food, heat, and housing budgets to deplete all or most of their savings or struggle to pay for basic necessities in order to pay for health care.
63% of respondents said they couldn't pay or would struggle to pay an unexpected medical bill of $500. The survey found Black and Latino communities faced greater struggles than white communities when paying health care costs. The nonprofit group Fair Health Prices Washington teamed up with the national organization United States of Care for the survey. Bill Kramer is the senior health policy advisor for the Purchaser Business Group on Health. He says consolidation in the industry has left people and businesses with little bargaining leverage. He says this is a big issue for small businesses.
These high prices and rapid premium increases have caused problems of slower business growth, lower business investment. It's harder to recruit and retain employees. It crowds out wages, and many small businesses simply can't afford to offer health benefits.
Last week, the Office of the Insurance Commissioner released a report analyzing five policies that could help the state rein in health care costs. Hatzenbieler says these policies could be a roadmap for lawmakers next session. She also notes that 87% of Washingtonians, across party lines, want lawmakers to take action.
It's time for policymakers to engage with ideas that could really make a difference for people's pocketbooks.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A new case filed in a Wyoming district court argues that a man sentenced to life in prison without parole was unconstitutional because of his age. Christopher Hicks was 19 years old in 2006 when he was convicted of aiding and abetting and conspiracy in two murders. Now, University of Wyoming law professor Lauren McLean argues that his sentence, life in prison without the possibility of parole, went against the state's constitution. Most legal cases involving late adolescents have, based on legal precedent known as Roper, cited neuroscience research from 2004. More recent research shows that a human brain is still developing into a person's 20s. McLean wants the law to catch up.
No one has looked at the new science and applied the new science. We have taken Roper's word, if you will, but so much has changed since then. Science is far ahead of the law and far ahead of society.
Other common policies support this, including the age minimum of renting cars at 25 and the expiration for dependents on health insurance at 26. McLean says she expects this case to advance to Wyoming's Supreme Court. That's the level where judges interpret the state's constitution, which has unique elements that apply in this case. First, it requires that the penal code be based on the humane principles of reformation. McLean argues that a sentence of life without parole for a 19-year-old doesn't meet that requirement.
This idea that whatever we do to people who we incarcerate, it needs to be reform-based. There's nothing like that in the United States Constitution. There's nothing like that in pretty much 48 other state constitutions. So that, I mean, that's pretty substantial to me.
Second, Wyoming's constitution outlaws cruel or unusual punishment, unlike the U.S. Constitution, which bans a combination of the two. McLean says that could be a lower threshold to reach. I'm Kathleen Shannon reporting for Wyoming News Service.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, partly cloudy through Friday night, lows 58 tonight and Friday night, high 89 tomorrow, 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon Saturday, otherwise mostly sunny, high 88 on Saturday. Saturday night, mostly clear, low 57 with a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms before midnight. And mostly clear Sunday through Monday, highs 87 Monday and 83. Highs 87 Sunday and 83 on Monday, low 56 Sunday night. Currently, we've got 88 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843, or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Coming up next is Flashpoints, and then at 7:30 we'll have Appearing Locally, where we'll feature music from bands and artists that are appearing in the Moscow Pullman area in the near future. That half-hour show ends around 8, and then we'll have Maximum Rock and Roll and more programming throughout the night. KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is sponsored by Mikey's Euros, specializing in Greek and Middle Eastern cuisine, such as gyros, falafel, hummus, and tabbouleh, located at 527 South Main Street in Moscow.
For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.
What can we expect if Trump is elected? I'm Bill Newman, and this is the Civil Liberties Minute. Let's start with Project 2025, a series of extreme policy proposals from the Heritage Foundation that several Trump loyalists assisted in preparing. Project 2025 calls for initiating mass deportations, mandating discrimination against trans people, and censoring classroom discussions about race and gender. And, as the late-night TV ads say, there's more! There's much more! The plan calls for replacing tens of thousands of career civil service employees with political loyalists, and prosecuting persons who send or receive abortion pills, and putting more and more power in the hands of the president. Recently, Trump has tried to distance himself from Project 2025, but the reality is that the recently adopted Republican Party platform and Project 2025 share key policies that would attack your, my, our rights. On the ACLU website, that's ACLU.org, you'll find memos on the major presidential candidates' positions on abortion access, LGBTQ justice, voting rights, immigration, anti-discrimination laws, criminal issues, free speech, surveillance, the First Amendment, and the right to protest and speak out. Although the ACLU does not endorse or oppose candidates for elected office, we recognize that there will be drastically different realities depending on who is president. And we believe emphatically in the importance of an informed electorate. The Civil Liberties Minute is made possible by the ACLU because freedom can't protect itself. It needs you.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leiserwitz, and this is Climate Connections. When a disaster strikes, you might need to evacuate your home quickly, so it's important to pack a go bag full of essentials beforehand. But that does not mean you need anything fancy.
You don't need to buy the official, you know, space food emergency preparedness kits.
Nadia Wiggins is with Listos California, an initiative of the Governor's Office of Emergency Services. She says a go bag should have non-perishable foods like canned soup or oatmeal, along with drinking water or a water purifier. You should also pack photocopies of any important documents, such as your ID and insurance coverage. Print out a map of your neighborhood and highlight evacuation routes and places you might be told to go for support.
Somewhere where in an emergency, if I was told by firefighters, EMTs, or other personnel to evacuate my home, I know the way and I know how to get there without GPS, without my phone, without a car.
Other items in a go bag can include cash, a first aid kit, batteries, a flashlight, a blanket, and tarps or ponchos. As climate change brings more extreme weather, it's important to be prepared before disaster strikes.
I keep a small tote bag with these things. I put it in my trunk out of sight, and I still feel a lot of peace of mind knowing that I have the bare minimum in my car.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Foreign detainees at Guantanamo Bay, who are still there.
America, the beautiful, aspirational, welcoming place.
Do not have the right to make due process claims in court.
Or America, the fearful, bitter, resentful, petty, not enough for all you foreigners place.
Peace Radio is back.
This is equally bummer.
Dear Mr. President.
Every other Sunday, 2 to 4 p.m. here on KRFP 90.3 FM and online.
Pardoned by Trump.
You'll find that Native Americans are familiar with the idea that a pandemic is a great time for capitalists to make a profit.
Every other Sunday.
Much of Bezos' new wealth is a result of changing consumer habits during the pandemic.
There's a message to my people, man. I know we only fighting to feel equal. Damn, use your words.
You have to stop. My eyes can't roll back any further.
People with no deceitful plan. Nah. Stand together, we'll be better in the end. I'm only reaching out. I got a hand that I can lend. I hope.